Cinema Time Capsule Podcast with your hosts, Jeff and Joel. This episode, we discuss kid adventure films from the 80s. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome to Cinema Time Capsule, everyone. Cinema Time Capsule's mission is to bring back the movies from the 80s back to the big screen. We screen the movies in front of a live audience to decide collectively if they are as good as we remember them. The movies that we screen are chosen by you, the viewer. So head to the lobby and get yourself a treat.
This episode, we are recapping 80s Christmas movies with our first screening of Gremlins, and we will turn our attention to our next screening of kid adventure movies.
I'm your host, child of the 80s, Jeff, and alongside me is my co-host, the doctor of all things retro. This is Joel.
Heyo.
That's weak. What was that exactly? I like that. Is that your new calling card?
Sure.
This week we have as our special guest, he's also our producer, esteemed producer, Simon. Simon is a professional musician. He has appeared in films. He is a radio host, and he is an educator, so what is he doing with us? We have no idea, but we're glad to have him on as well. Simon, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
So
excited to be here.
I would like to know, just to frame it for the audience, tell us the year you were born.
I was born in 1973.
Oh, he's significantly older than us. Yes, we're 1977.
That's why we have him around.
Yes.
Smarter.
So this, yeah.
I don't know if that's the case.
No, you're bringing a lot to the table here. So tell us, as you were growing up, what was your favorite toy, maybe your favorite food, TV show, music, film, anything that kind of tells us where we're at?
Well, my first film that I remember going to see in the theater was Star Wars.
Oh, man.
So that was the first. Like, I think I must have gone to a theater before then, but I distinctly remember Star Wars. My dad actually took me to Star Wars for my birthday, and then I received the double vinyl soundtrack for my birthday. And I still have that record today.
You do not.
I do. So Star Wars toys were a big thing for me when I was a kid. And then as I got a little older, I transitioned from Star Wars to G.I. Joe. Mm. And, you know, G.I. Joe and Star Wars would fight sometimes, too. So we had that.
I did the same thing.
Yes, intergalactic battles.
Yes, exactly. And as far as music goes, well, I'm a jazz musician mostly when I play music. So I love all jazz, all things jazz. I'm also partial to Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and stuff like that, too. I guess I just have a huge variety. I can't pick just one music that I like better.
Do you remember your first album?
Other than the Star Wars album that I got for my birthday, the first thing I ever bought myself was Duran Duran Arena.
Oh, love that album.
Yeah, that was the first album I ever bought myself. But I have a lot of record store stories, actually. A lot of memories of buying records and specific records. And a lot of those records I still have.
Mine was Thriller and the Mini Pops. I got them for Christmas.
Nice, Mini Pops.
Do you remember your first album or no?
I had a Michael Jackson obsession back then. Remember using my dad's gardening gloves, or just one of them, because it looked so cool. But I can't remember what I bought.
It'll come back.
I have the Star Wars album downstairs as well.
Right on. It's probably in better shape than mine.
It was a library discard. When libraries would do that? Yes. And they're like, we're getting rid of stuff.
Mine came with a poster.
Oh.
That poster, I don't have it anymore. I remember because it was on my wall in my bedroom. And then when we took it down, the part, like the taped part, stayed on the thing, so it was like full of holes. But I see those posters going for big money now, and I always regret that mine didn't survive.
So, for our first screening, we asked you, the viewer/listener, to choose an 80s holiday movie worthy of our Cinema Time Capsule. The list included such masterpieces as Ernest Saves Christmas, Bill Murray and Scrooged, the Bob Clark classic A Christmas Story, Dudley Moore's Santa Claus the Movie. However, with 43% of the vote, the movie you chose to put in the capsule was 1984's Gremlins.
Yeah, and that's a landslide victory.
It was sizable.
I went back and I looked at the vote, and Ernest didn't pull through at all. Dudley Moore didn't drive anything. It was kind of between Scrooged, Christmas Story, and Gremlins. I was surprised that Gremlins won. I wanted Gremlins to win. Did you want Gremlins to win, Joel? Or were you... You wanted Ernest. You had no hope.
No.
If that's a movie, that's a Christmas movie in Florida.
We're talking about Gremlins.
Yeah. I wouldn't have pegged Gremlins as a Christmas movie myself, although now that you mention it, yeah, I can see it totally belongs on that list. The thing I think with this one is you guys are focusing on 80s movies. The Christmas Story and the Santa Claus the movie, I mean, they were kind of early
older.
80s.
Yeah, they're set. Even older. And, I mean, the Christmas Story is set in the 50s.
Yeah,
so.
And then The Scrooge, it's later in the 80s.
I want to say 88.
See, if you'd have asked me, I probably would have thought 91. Mm. So Gremlins is 1984. It is right in the center of the 80s in its neon glory, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
And it's Steven Spielberg.
And I think it fits in that category of, it's like the Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Gremlins is a Christmas movie in the same
that's
way.
A debate
of, it's
we
like
could have.
Not a traditional, like just Christmas story theme itself.
Yeah. Well, I know that the makers of Die Hard don't consider it to be a Christmas movie. It's just a movie set at Christmas time because there's no real Christmas. No. But that's, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own belief. Any movie that you watch traditionally at a Christmas time is a Christmas movie.
Yep.
If it gives you those Christmas vibes, right?
So. Yep.
So Gremlins does have, it is surrounding the theme of Christmas, although it was released June.
Yeah, that's strange.
It was June. I guess the question I have, and then we're going to get into, you know, what the screening, what the vibe was like. Where were you, or what was your first experience with the film Gremlins? Either one of you can go for that.
Go ahead, Sam.
I think I must have seen it on VHS. I don't think I saw it in the theater. But I recently watched it. Well, recently. So I watched it with my daughter. So I'm trying to get my daughter. She's in grade 8 right now. Over the last few years, we've tried to watch a lot of these movies we're going to talk about. We've watched just, you know, to see. And some of them she digs and some of them she doesn't dig. Some of them I still dig and some of them I don't dig. But yeah, Gremlins I really enjoyed watching even, you know, in the last few years. It was great. I think I must have been VHS. And I liked it just as much, this, you know, in the present day as I did back there.
Joel, what about you?
I don't think I saw it. I am pretty sure I didn't see it possibly until we watched it. Because I was 7 when
Wait
it
a
came
second.
Out.
Hold on. Let me stop you here. You went your entire child life and adult life not seeing Gremlins.
I have no recollection
it's,
of
that's
seeing
an
it.
Absolute travesty for so many reasons. What's the issue here?
Well, as a child...
Did you boycott this film?
Yeah, I had very strong opinions on film as a 7-year-old. No, my family, we were fairly conservative with our movie watching. So there were things that we just would, we might have started watching, but got turned off when it became clear what was happening or certain words get used.
Were you concerned that there was, like, the Mogwais were being exploited? Is that maybe one of the
No,
concerns?
That's more of a view I would, or a concern.
Was it
later
a butcher
on.
Knife going through a gremlin?
I'm guessing that was probably on the list of maybe my. Folks weren't thrilled about the what could be happening in the movie. Maybe my dad would tell me, no, we did see it, but I have no recollection of it.
Yeah. Well, if you were 7 when it came out, you wouldn't have been able to see it for a year or 2 before it came out actually on VHS, right?
National Video would have bought that one copy for $150 rented it out.
So if your family was... on the conservative end of things, my family was kind of on the opposite side of, just kind of do what you want. And what I'm trying to get across here is I saw some pretty insane things. The first movie I ever saw on VHS was The Big Chill. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Totally inappropriate.
I have not, actually.
And I recall sitting, I think I've told you the story, Joel. For family movie night, my mother rented Basic Instinct.
Oh.
And it was horrifying, but yet titillating at the same time. And I really didn't know how to react to it, and no one said anything during the viewing at home, but I was confused for years afterwards. So seeing Gremlins, my point about this one is, seeing Gremlins was just kind of like, we're going to the movies, this is what's playing, and I do remember it was on Ottawa Street in Hamilton.
The Avon Theater.
I don't know, it could have been the Avon, I don't know which one. You would probably...
Is that the one that's still there, except for it's not a theater?
The Marquee is there.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, and I clearly
I'm pretty sure I saw Rocky V there.
Amazing. That's another amazing film.
See, I'm that much older than you guys, as you pointed out earlier, that I... When Gremlins would have been on VHS, I would have been able to go rent movies myself, and, you know, we would have hung out with friends or whatever. My parents, I didn't watch it with my parents that much, I know for sure. So,
So yeah, I mean, we all have a different jumping in point. So when we generated this list and we got our vote, overwhelmingly people wanted to see this film, and it's kind of obvious to me why, because it is kind of a niche kind of film, crazy special effects that we can talk about. But let's talk about the vibe of the show. So this was our first inaugural debut screening, and Joel, I personally thought it was just going to be you and me talking to
our families.
We had no indication who was going to show up. Even our friends that we know, we're like trying to get them to come out, and they were not like, they're like, I don't know if I can make it. So I think we had like two or three friends that did show up. A couple ditched us. I'm not going to mention names, but you know who you are. So what was your feeling?
It was, very surprise, a positive surprise. I think, thankfully, we had a lot of... promotional support from the Playhouse, which we were excited about.
And we were also on Simon's radio show.
Yeah, I think that was a nice addition to promote it and prepare us. And so, yeah, we had like 80 people show up, which was...
I think it was 85. And
sure.
Maybe 86.
But it was in the 80s.
I remember.
Appropriately. Yeah. It was in the 80s.
I remember the first people showed up was your in-laws, and they were sitting down. I'm like, okay, at least we have, four people here. And then we walked out in the lobby, and there was a lineup.
Yeah, and out the door.
I was pretty stoked, and there was people wearing Gremlin sweaters, and one young kid had a
Gizmo
bag, and I was surprised.
And a stuffed animal.
Yeah, I was surprised that there were... people bringing their own kids to this event, and I don't know. I was pretty excited for that. Seeing people getting excited about Gremlins
for sure, and being able to see it on a 35mm print that was in really good condition was fun to think back that we were watching what people had watched in 1984.
Yeah, and it was really grainy, and not in a bad way, but it was kind of like
it just gave it some,
to a record almost.
Yeah, yeah. Warmth.
It was warm and scrumptious.
It's an interesting choice of words.
Yeah. So overall, I thought the film, the viewing went off well. The crowd was into it.
Yep.
There's a lot of cheering going on and a lot of laughing at the inappropriate parts, which
I was really
happy about.
Yes. There were a few spots that got really dark. And it appeared that others had also forgotten about those.
Do you remember in particular?
Yeah, when the discussion of what happened to her father, why Christmas was not enjoyable in that house, that was
and we can
intense.
Spoil that. We can spoil that.
Are you sure you want to?
I think we can. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think that. I think there should be a rule. Like, I mean, if the movie's more than 10 years old, then if you haven't seen it yet, that's...
40,
Yeah, like, so I definitely would be devastated if we found my dad stuffed in the chimney 2 weeks later.
Right.
So
that would suck.
Phoebe Cates...
I can see how, the holidays would maybe not be as enjoyable.
So the film was it's a totally dark, but deliciously funny film. And the effects are incredible. Does anyone have any thoughts about the effects that you were taking a look at during that film?
Well, I think one of the things that's great about Gremlins in particular, there's other movies that fall into this category too, but like the effects hold up. You know, some movies, the effects are, like, from the 80s and the late 70s, even into the, some movies into the 90s, you watch them now and you, like, you can barely watch them because the effects are so terrible. But that's not the case with Gremlins. Like, you really don't feel like you're watching an old movie. It's just a movie set in the past, which is fairly popular today. So many movies are set in retro settings, mm-hmm. or shows like Stranger Things or whatever is set in the 80s. So it's not that unusual to watch a story that's happening in the 80s. And I think Gremlins holds up totally as far as the effects go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the using puppets is always more interesting to me, because it's physical compared to CGI that gets used now. Even though, you know, some of it, you know what you're watching, but there's something more engaging with it. And certainly we read up about how much money they spent on creating every single one of those puppets. And, like, they would check people's trunks as they were leaving filming for the day because they were concerned someone was going to steal one and try and sell it. But they would have spent a lot of money on that. Yeah, and it held up very nicely.
Zach Galligan, the lead actor who played... Oh, why did I forget his name?
It's Billy.
Billy, sorry. Yeah, like, how can I forget that? So he said it was a horrific kind of... in the middle of summer in L.A. when they were shooting it, and he had to wear...
winter clothing.
Well, he had to wear winter clothing, but for the Gizmo backpack stuff, which is totally iconic, he had all these, like, puppeteers sitting on feet controlling these cables. He's pouring sweat. He said it was totally grueling, but absolutely worth it. I mean, that's where you see films today, and you can look and go, yeah, that's spectacular, but the computer-generated graphics don't hold a candle to do
practical effects.
The practical effects are just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought, it's really interesting to me that the town square in Gremlins is the same back lot they used for Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there must be dozens of other movies, but Back to the Future is the one that...
Once you see it, you can't not see it either. Every single angle, you know, hey, that's where the car ran into the end of the street.
Right, but that's where the manure truck dumped into Biff's car and all that stuff.
Which I thought about bringing up that night, but at the end, because I thought if we point them out to people, you'll be focused on that. Like, so leaving it, then people might find out later, like, oh my gosh, now I totally see it. But I didn't see it at the time.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little story that kind of proves your point about taking you out of it. It's nothing to do with the Gremlins, but I once saw a movie, it was a bad movie, it's Exit Wounds. It has Steven Seagal and DMX in it. I don't know if you're familiar.
And it was bad?
It wasn't the best movie I'd ever seen. It wasn't even good for a Steven Seagal movie. Okay?
It sucked.
It was no Under Siege or like Marked for Death.
Right.
Okay?
No, fair enough.
Here's the thing. Exit Wounds was filmed in Hamilton, right downtown Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Jackson Square to watch Exit Wounds. And while I'm watching Exit Wounds, the car chase scene passes the theater that I am watching it in. And literally everybody in the theater turned their heads to look over to see and half expect to see the car coming down the road. And then from that moment on, you just can't, you're just like, well, this is obviously fake, because not only did that never happen, but they just drove the car down the wrong way on a one-way street in Hamilton. So, like, this is obviously
fake. And this was not in The Spectator. I would have heard about this.
Yes, exactly. So, it can totally mess you up. Mm-hmm. It can make it really hard to sort of go get back into that this is a real thing that's happening, even though clearly it isn't,
because
there's Gremlins and Mogwai. But
I wonder, along those lines, for kids now watching Gremlins, for example, most movies don't use puppetry and practical effects, then does this stand out as not looking good to them, I wonder? Or if...
I asked my own kids, because they came to the screening as well. I said, what did you think of Gremlins? They said they loved and hated. I said, what was the hate part? They thought it was too scary.
Really?
For them, yeah. But they loved just being able to look at the effects, and the movie just feels interesting and different to them, because there's not really a lot like that around, sure. I guess. But yeah, they did say that it frightened them. So I think that is a marker of a good film, like traumatization of the youth. Okay, listen, I was traumatized basically through the entire 80s. I had PTSD from the films I watched. So
Your mom rented you.
Yeah, like the fact that I could pass that down to my kids is, you know.
That tradition of that trauma?
Because now we have Common Sense Media and IMBD Parent, and I know every single swear word that's coming or everything inappropriate. We had no idea it was coming. Our parents had no idea.
No, my parents knew. That's why I didn't see Gremlins.
Everything is coming. So yeah, like it's so. I'm not saying like I want to traumatize my children. Please don't say, you know, child of the 80s, Jeff wants to traumatize his children. I'm just saying it's interesting that they kind of picked up on that.
Yep.
That vibe of, you know, it's a good movie, but there's a little bit,
yeah,
a little bit dark.
Yeah. I thought they were going to say they hated it just because you liked it, because generally that's what
that happens a lot.
Right.
And there's many more instances that we'll discuss in further episodes. So is there anything else that you wanted to say about the screening, Joel, before we move on to our newest screening?
No, I think it just started great. It was a wonderful debut and had us excited to do it again.
And I should point out that our first screening was at a beautiful single cinema called The Playhouse in beautiful Hamilton, Ontario, right. Canada, where we're
situated. It's sort of a retro-looking theater, too. Yeah. It's sort of restored to, I don't know, what, definitely like not modern look.
Yeah.
I don't know what...
It seemed really appropriate sort of, to be screening a film at a theater like this.
Yeah.
If anybody is listening, I shouldn't say watching, listening, if you've ever seen the Netflix show called Lock and Key, in the season 2 premiere of Lock and Key, there's a scene in a movie theater lobby, and it's in the Playhouse.
Oh, nice.
Is it?
In the Playhouse, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they've filmed a number of things there, I think.
Yeah, and that previously we were talking about the movie theater marquee that still exists on Ottawa Street. Mm. That's actually featured quite a bit in another Netflix show, The Umbrella Academy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's Hamilton Landmarks theaters making their way
into... And I mean, Hamilton has a large per capita single kind of film house style anyway, because apparently I heard this from my parents. They were talking about how Hamilton was a mecca for vaudeville performers in the 20s and 30s.
Well, that's how the Playhouse, well, the Playhouse is interesting because it was actually made to be a movie theater. It was one of the few that was actually made to be a movie theater, not a vaudeville theater converted to a movie theater, but the Playhouse still did host vaudeville type shows sometimes too. Mm.
So what we'd like to thank the Playhouse for allowing us to come in and screen our very first film. So thank you very much, Playhouse Theater in Hamilton. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about our next screening. And Joel, do we have any advertisers for this edition? Did you line anyone up, or?
The line was really long, and honestly,
so we got nothing?
I wasn't able to nail anything down, but.
Nothing appropriate.
No.
Too many.
Did you hear anything, Simon?
No.
So, okay.
Too many condom companies?
We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, folks. This is Cinema Time Capsule, Episode 1.
Cinema Time Capsule podcast. Not to be confused with Cinema
the screen,
Time Capsule.
Right? Yeah.
And
so
all those people.
We're
going to
talk
confused.
About our next screening. We are doing kid adventure movies from the 80s.
So, in honor of the 80s, Joel has graciously provided us with 80s styles refreshments. So, I'm just going to open my Tahitian treat fruit punch right now. Here we go.
Ooh,
listen to that freshness.
I am now type 2 diabetic just from inhaling the fumes.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Do you guys remember collecting those pop bottles in the forests or the fields and returning them for penny candy money? Did anyone do that?
Sure.
Like my grandma would send me to go pick up cigarettes for her, Cameo menthols, and a couple packs of matches. and which is totally normal. And I would pick up a few bottles, and I would then I would get some penny candy, and it was a penny per piece. Mm-hmm. Did anyone else do that?
I don't remember returning a lot of pop, but you know what? My in my household, we may have watched Gremlins, but we didn't drink pop.
No.
So there weren't really pop bottles. Sign of the devil.
We never had bottles. We had the cheapest cola. That's why I remember RC Cola was a regular feature in our fridge, because it was cheaper than Coca-Cola.
Everything was cheaper than Coca-Cola.
True.
So did anyone else buy smokes for their grandma or their mother?
A very brief period of my life where I was just old enough to walk to the store. So I was 7 or 8, which now would never happen. But only for a little while did my mom smoke. There was only maybe 3 or 4 times.
Did you have the note?
I did the first time.
Because you'd give the note to the lady, and the lady would read the note. And this matches up.
This is totally
legit. Here's your 2 packs of cigarettes, young man.
Exactly.
This is definitely not a child's writing. He did not forge this.
Yeah. So I think after the first time, though, like, I think they sort of knew me, and, you know, they
were pretty. Here's your smokes, kid.
Here you go. Make sure you don't smoke them all in one place, kid.
All right. So we're speaking about, you know, going on an adventure to the convenience store.
Big V. Going down to Big V.
Big V, yes. Or Becker's.
Mm.
Max Milk was a big one for me. Or Jug City. So take that where you want. So we're talking about kid adventure movies. And the 80s, like, I think part of the reason why 80s movies were so fun, and the 80s in general, is kids were just doing what they wanted. Okay? Like, you were taking your bike, you were riding into storm sewers, your parents didn't know where you were, and they probably didn't care that much. You were just getting through the day, and so were they. So all of these adventure movies started to pop up, and we were ripe for them. So we had, I'm sure there's more than we had to pare them down. We had to curate them, because that's what we do. We're 80s films curators. So if we didn't include your movie, we do apologize. Please feel free to go to our Facebook page and comment if you need
politely comment.
Whatever works.
Or impolitely, I guess. Mm-hmm.
But Joel, can you go through the 6 films that we asked our viewers to vote on?
Sure. We did have a longer list, and you and I had to banter back and forth about which ones were worthy of getting into the vote.
We should have recorded that, because it was so intense. Mm-hmm. There was such an intensity.
Yeah, I think the listeners would be surprised we're in the same room now, given how harsh it became.
It was devastating.
But we worked through it to come up with this list. 6 films. We had Explorers, Goonies, Adventures in Babysitting, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Space Camp, and Stand By Me.
It's a solid list.
It is a solid list.
I don't think
it's nice to see that your love of 80s movies allowed you to overcome the conflict you had created making the list. It's nice to see.
Brought us back together.
That's great. Brotherly 80s love.
And I don't even remember what we left out, but I left feeling this was, I mean, it was a probably 10 to 12 hour debate, but I feel that we captured what we wanted to capture, and then we put the vote out there.
Yep.
We'll give you the results shortly, but what we'll do is we'll kind of go into, you know, just a little snippet of each film, maybe something we remember or don't remember. We may trash the film, we may build it up bigger than it is, but I mean, that's what we do here at Cinema Time Capsule. So let's start with Explorers. The floor is open. I'm going to just let you know that I don't know who directed it, but this was, I think, River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke's first movie, and a third dude that I don't know. And I feel, you know, that's not very journalistic of me to just give the top billing to the two major actors.
I don't think anybody ever accused you of being a journalist.
No.
No.
The other guy wasn't in Bop or Teen Beat, so that's probably why we don't know him.
Or Tiger Beat.
Oh my gosh, the crazy thing of you say that, like, it's a joke, but I had those magazines.
Me too.
The weirdest thing, okay, I had tons of posters of, like, The Outsiders, because my aunt, she was 16 at the time, so she got me. I had Duran Duran.
Mm-hmm.
I had all these, you know, hunky dudes on my wall. Yeah. And
Johnny Depp.
Rob Lowe. And, you know, and I realized this, I'm taking this off on a tangent. This has nothing to do with it. My first crush, though, was Alyssa Milano, and that that went up in my locker, and I was told by my sixth grade teacher, take that off your locker.
She was definitely the boss of your heart.
Yeah. So anyway, I had a lot of Tiger Beat, and I do remember River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke. So Explorers.
Sorry to interrupt. While you were reminiscing there, I just checked. Joe Dante, actually.
I know. Was the director for Explorers. Joe Dante.
I forgot that.
I love Joe Dante. Everyone knows that. He did Gremlins.
Was he in Tiger Beat?
I don't think
Tiger Beat had like director's features. No.
That was a real gap in the market there.
So Joe Dante will continue to come back throughout our screenings and our podcasts. He's an 80s legend. So the film, Simon, have you seen this film?
I have not. I don't think I did. As we already established, I'm kind of old. And even though I think I have a really good memory for movies, I got to admit at this point I've seen so many. I used to work at Jumbo Video, so I used to watch a lot of movies. I'm starting to forget them.
Sure. Probably all the salt from the Jumbo Video popcorn has degraded your memory.
Okay, viewers, thing you need to understand about Jumbo Video, okay, what this place was it was like a beacon for the youngster because it had free popcorn.
It was like Blockbuster Video.
Before Blockbuster.
With free cost, free popcorn.
So it was another Canadian thing before Blockbuster. Free popcorn, and literally we had one next to our high school.
Yep.
And we would go every day after school to, air quoting, look for a movie and eat four bags of popcorn and just leave because we couldn't afford the movies.
And our mouths were burned.
Yes.
I don't recall seeing this, but this one came up a lot from when we discussed with folks about the theme. And so I watched it, and yeah, it was... It was better than I hoped.
And so part of our role here is Joel and I have agreed to watch every single film that we are putting out there.
It's just potentially going to screen then. So you're watching not just the one that wins, but all of the ones on
everything.
The list.
Yeah.
From now.
I don't have a problem with it because I don't watch movies that were made after the year 2000 because they suck. Joel, I think I got... on Joel's case, because last time we did a screening, he refused to watch Santa Claus the movie by Dudley Moore. And I was like, you can't do that, dude. And we got into another horrible argument about
it.
Wow. Oof.
And you never did watch it.
I did not, because by then Christmas had passed. And
Really hard to watch Christmas movies.
So we did come to the resolution. It's not Christmas. We did come to the resolution.
Yes, we agreed from here on out.
Yes.
So
he did, and I forced him. And what do you think?
I liked it. I mean...
The whole thing?
Okay, there are aspects of it that I thought were inconsistent, but overall, as a kid adventure movie, it totally hits for kids of that age. I would have been that kid, been super stoked on it, and like tried to convince myself, man, if I could just find all of these pieces, I could create my own spaceship. Yeah. So
they make a spaceship out of a...
garbage.
Well, they take the Tilt-A-Whirl car, which, I mean, I was talking about this the other day with some of our friends. We had this old amusement park called Prudhomme's Landing, and it was a horribly dangerous park. There's no safety features whatsoever. And there was a Tilt-A-Whirl that I puked on hard. And I still went back. I love that Tilt-A-Whirl. So when this movie came out and they turned the Tilt-A-Whirl into a spaceship, I was like, come on. I can do this. And do you ever been to Prudhomme's Landing?
No, not when it was an amusement park. And
what? Just when it was a vacant lot.
Where are you from?
Well, I grew up
right
in Hamilton,
there.
But I was more West End, so so that it wasn't quite...
Confederation was closer.
Yeah,
Confederation.
It's West, and just, listener, just so you know, West End Hamilton is the upscale version.
Of Hamilton.
Joel and I are East Enders, so we're bottom of the barrel here.
Mm-hmm.
So the first act is them building the contraption, and that's super exciting. Mm-hmm. The possibilities are endless. But then for me, Joel, it turned into like the second act was a bit of a catastrophe for me. They went up to space.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see them flying in space in a Tilt-A-Whirl. and then they go visit these aliens, and the aliens
that was terrible.
The aliens weren't cool.
No.
They're badly built.
Just
sounds more like they got in the tilt-whirl and smote something or dropped something bad, and actually they never went to space. This is all just
Joel made a good comment to me. We were talking the other day, and what did you say about the oxygen? Because they had oxygen tanks on. Like, they made these, like, oxygen masks out of, like, cups and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, totally. That would totally work. And then what did they do with the oxygen once they got into space? Do you remember?
They just took it off.
They took it off.
It was like they needed it to get to outer space. But then once they were in outer space, it's just between Earth and outside of the Earth's orbit. Then you don't need it anymore.
Have you ever been to space? How do you know?
It's true.
That's true.
Maybe this was more scientifically accurate than I was expecting.
Oh, man.
But it did feel a bit like they wrote two movies, or they were trying to... They did, like, an adventure movie, and there was a little bit of comedy at the beginning, but it was subtle, and then the aliens were just, like, trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And they were...
It was like Jar Jar Binks, the first Jar Jar Binks, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was going to show this to my kids. I really guard the 80s, and I curate it for them because, like, I don't want them to think that some of the movies were stupid, so I only show them the gold one.
And they'll just stop watching what you tell them to.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not showing this
one.
So I don't know. I love the adventure part of the Tilt-A-Whirl, the building.
Yeah.
River Phoenix makes it fly with just by typing stuff into an old computer. And I'm like, okay.
They were more powerful
than
we understood.
Was it a Commodore 64?
No, it wasn't even close to a Commodore 64.
I think it may have had 64 kilobytes of memory, if I recall correctly.
Well, if it was a VIC-20, it only had 20.
Right. So, yeah, no, there's no tape. It was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I love the Commodore 64. My school saved up, I think we sold chocolate bars.
$4,000.
We sold chocolate bars for 2 years so we could get two of these computers that I never could use.
Not a pet? Do you remember the PET?
Oh, the PET? Yes. Yeah, that was the first computer I ever encountered. Actually, my parents were both teachers, and they would bring the PET computers from their high school that they taught at. They would bring them home for the summer, and I would play games by
lived a charm life.
Press play.
West End, you said. West End.
You know what? I bet you went to Canada's Wonderland while all us East Enders were at Prudhomme's Landing getting beat up by the... Silly.
St. Catherine's kids.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so moving on, Goonies. Like I don't even know. Like, everyone knows the Goonies.
Yeah.
The Goonies is one of those movies that, like... So I made... We watched it with my daughter, and...
Okay, what'd she say?
Well, she loved it, and I think it's... Like, I think everybody should watch the Goonies, because it's one of those movies that's made it into, like, our cultural consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's new media being... made today that makes Goonies references. One of my daughter's favorite shows was, I don't know if it still is, probably not, but it was Teen Titans Go. Now, I don't know if either of you have seen Titans Go. Just a quick recap. It's basically DC comic book characters, the Teen Titans, like Robin and Cyborg, Beast Boy, Raven, and Starfire. But it's a silly cartoon with them in it. And there is an episode where they literally remake the Goonies with the Teen Titans.
Oh, really?
Right? And it's a great episode.
I need to see it now.
But because my daughter had seen Goonies, she got even enjoyed it even more. You know, it's funny even without it, but having seen the Goonies and watching this episode of TV, it's only 20 minutes. I think the story is only... But there's two stories per episode, so I think it's only a 10-minute story, but still, you get so much more out of it. So, you know... There are certain sort of touchstones movies that are constantly referenced, and Goonies is one of them.
It's part of the lexicon, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, everyone from all ages can kind of relate to it. I remember going and seeing the film. It was one of my first memories of film just because it was so important, I guess. And this movie falls right in the middle of the 80s. It's 1985. It's starring Josh Brolin, who now is... Marvel Cinematic Universe legend.
Yeah, he's Thanos in the Avengers movies. He's also Cable in the Deadpool movies. So if you're
just a side note, I refuse to watch Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. So just again,
well, you're missing out on.
That's okay.
I don't know
There's too many movies from the 80s to watch, so I just don't have time. I'm sorry.
All right,
and rewatch.
And then you have like people popping up like Corey Feldman. who continues to pop up through the 80s, Sean Astin, who ends up saving Middle Earth.
Yep.
There's just a huge cast of characters. Data, who was also legendary in Temple of Doom.
As Short Round.
Mm-hmm. As Short Round. Yep. And the director was Richard Donner, who again appears throughout the 80s with some amazing films. Joel, you have, like, I know that you would have a reference for this as a kid, but mm-hmm. could you elaborate on your adult kind of connection with this? And this is why you're one of my retro heroes.
Right. Well, we had a friend get married out west, lives in Oregon. And when we traveled out there to the wedding, my wife and I made a point of traveling out to Astoria, home of the Goonies. And I have been to the house. I don't think I went up on the porch because that'd be kind of weird. Someone lives in it, but I did stand in their yard or outside.
Is the yard where there's the screen porch and the gate, he does the house truffle shuffle right on the sidewalk there. Yeah, yep. Nice. Yep.
And then we went out to Cannon Beach, so we saw where One-Eyed Willie sailed away. The town has turned around since back then. They've done well. So
because
well
of
that,
the Goonies, do you think?
I think so, yeah. It must have been all the gold that and jewels that they did save that it kept it afloat, and such that the jail was there, too. So they actually did film at the jail. And then just in the same neighborhood is the house from Short Circuit.
Oh,
Was that filmed there, too?
That, yeah. Wow. And there's a bar in town that filmed a bar scene for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, too.
Wow.
So
that's like another thing that's really unique to 1980s filmmaking is that it wasn't done inside studios all the time. It was done on location, and there's tons of movies that do that. And it's far and few between nowadays. It's mostly done in a controlled environment. So being able to go to a place that you've seen in a film, mm-hmm. it must have been surreal almost.
Yeah, that was movie I'm pretty sure we saw and certainly watched multiple times as an adult, and for my wife's family, that's, they call it a classic movie for them that they all know and loved. So it was a lot of fun, and especially now, because when I've looked at it since, because people were so ignorant, they actually have blocked off the street so you can't go there anymore.
Okay.
Which would be awful for the people who live there, because they're like, this is super inconvenient because people are just jerks, but I guess they need to protect themselves.
It's something similar happened to I guess was Full House 80s or was that more like 90s?
I think 90s.
Yeah, so, early 90s, very early.
The producers of the new show, the Fuller House, had to actually buy the house.
Yep.
They never filmed that. It's just it's just in the credits.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, they bought the house simply because, like, nobody wanted to buy it, and the people that lived there were so inundated
really?
People taking pictures on their porch.
Wow.
So yeah. So I mean,
1987, by the way, Simon. So you've got it.
Well, and
you nailed it.
So they crossed over into the 90s, though.
And that's and so maybe I can go back to our Christmas one, because I was able to go and visit the Christmas Story house. In December.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was a lot of fun. It's in a little tiny neighborhood in Cleveland. I've been to Cleveland lots of times. I have a number of friends that live there. So maybe those will be our American listeners. And it's tucked away, and that they did that they bought the house. They bought the house next door to it. Someone did, and renovated it. It actually wasn't filmed inside that house, or there were only a couple scenes. So it was filmed up here in Toronto on a set.
The house was the school was St. Catharines.
Yes, the school was in St. Catharines, now a shelter. But then they renovated the inside of the house to look like the movie, and you can rent it out Airbnb style and stay over. It is crazy expensive to do so.
I would imagine.
And then they bought the houses across the street, which they've turned into a museum with all of the memorabilia, and the one beside that is a gift shop.
That's so cool, though.
It was really neat to be able to
capitalize on the fame of the film mm-hmm. instead of just poor homeowners being like inundated with rabid film fans taking pictures on their porch.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. Back to the Goonies. It did pass my kids' litmus test. They say it's one of the all-time great films. So that bodes well for this category as well. So moving on, we've got Adventures in Babysitting. This is starring Elizabeth Shue and everyone else. Okay. I couldn't tell you who else is in it. I can tell you I watched it because of Elizabeth Shue.
Sure.
I'm not going to get further into that. But
and I'm pretty sure that when this didn't get played in my house because there were certain words
Well, I got to tell you.
My aunt took me to this one.
We watched...
Mess with the Lords of Hell. What is it? No, it wasn't Mess, by the way.
No.
It wasn't Mess.
I don't know the first time I saw this, but I know that when I watched this one with my daughter, we didn't finish it.
I remember you told me that.
She didn't dig it. She was not into it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I always try to remember that, you know, whatever you're watching is of the time and not to get kind of too wrapped up in things that are a concern for modern day. But the number of times little kids call each other homo in this film, it really turned me off.
Yeah.
And I remember we did talk about that, Simon, and I thought about that, and I watched it on Disney Plus with my kids, and so it actually washed some of those words out.
Did they cut them out?
Yeah, I watched it on Netflix, I think. I can't say for sure. I know it was the babysitter. It was don't mess with the babysitter. And I want to say maybe some of those other words were washed out. So for me as a, you know, What year was this movie?
Was it 87 or 88?
So, I mean, we would have been 10.
Yeah.
Right? Simon was 37 at this point. So, for me, a lot of these things would not have come out, and it was just a wicked adventure movie for me. If I put myself back to my 10-year-old self, and I'm going down to downtown Chicago, and Thor's there, and people are shooting guns, and you're going into blues club singing. I was like all on that.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be a great, hey, let's watch this great movie that I remember enjoying. Mm-hmm. My daughter was only maybe 10 or 11 too, you know what I mean? So like that was a couple years ago now. So maybe we could try it again now even with a little.
But it's funny that you would even say try again,
you know.
Because you're like your point is taken, like you know, no 10-year-old should be hearing like derogatory words, right? And like as kids, hey, go watch this movie. There's lots of swearing and stuff and inappropriate. Okay, I'm going to drop you off now. So,
hence, it was not viewed in my home. And I watched it. I don't recall watching it as a teenager. I watched it recently.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I didn't love it. Like, there were, I think maybe that's a part of it that I was watching it, even though I can appreciate the time it was done in, that even me at that age, I knew that it wasn't nice to call people names and these are bad words. So I think I now think even more strongly, oh gosh, I can't believe
was the fact that it's kids using that language. It almost would be, I mean, not that it's less bad or worse, but something about these sort of innocent type kids just whipping these slurs off like it's nothing. I really disliked. That really got me. It's totally different than if adults are doing it, because you kind of, it's just different.
Sometimes that hits me with movies too, that I think, okay, if you've scripted a kid to say something that if they weren't in this movie, you'd be like, you can't say that. Don't use that kind of language. Oh, no, but we want you to. That I still, struggle with that.
Interestingly, though, and I don't want to play the devil's advocate or, like, you know, give it a pass, but in the Goonies, there's a fair amount of colorful language and words. Yes. Less derogatory, but
still, I think there are fewer.
Still, well,
swear words and derogatory terms. There's a line there that...
If we have a listener, someone will probably tell us, you know, some of the things that we're missing here.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're probably missing a lot.
Or maybe we're not missing them and just not talking
about them. Just before we move on, this film was directed by another prolific 80s director-writer. Anyone know?
Chris Columbus.
Chris Columbus. Yes.
Did he do
another
he did
some of the Gremlins production?
He wrote his very first film that he wrote. Gremlins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And had to temper dramatically.
Yeah. And then, of course, did we already talk about Home Alone? Like he did a Home Alone?
We referenced it before.
So, yeah. So Chris Columbus, I don't know if this was his directorial debut or not, but he was pretty big in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Moving on. This one was like tacked on to...
to counter the offensiveness that may exist within Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah, this is like 1989, so this is like near the end. It's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Amazing. Any memories of this one?
I loved it. I remember we definitely rented the VHS and recorded it on our second VHS so that we could watch it.
You were like pre-Napster pirates.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, tons of them. Couldn't afford to buy them back then, right?
Well, nobody had the same.
They weren't really available for purchase the same way they are now.
Yeah.
Right? Like you couldn't just go out and buy. So the only way you could do it was rent it.
Simon, mm-hmm. you must have done tons of pirating being at Jumbo. You must have had definitely the two.
No, there was no point.
You could just get it whenever you wanted. You just reserve it.
I did it every weekend. I would get
well, we couldn't reserve the newest stuff. We had to let the customers have that. But I knew I'd always eventually get to... Plus, back then, oh my God, back then. I mean, you could go on Tuesday nights to the movies for $2.
Yeah, I remember
just
it.
Just go see
Tuesday. Yes, the malls.
Yeah. Go Jackson over to Square. KFC and get your Toonie Tuesday and then go get a movie for $2.
So
yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was... I want to say it was a big movie for Canadian kids because it had some of our comic geniuses in it. Well, no, only one comic genius, and that was Rick Moranis, who was of Second City fame, another Canadian show. This was starring Rick Moranis, again, Rick Moranis and everyone else. So this happens a few times in the 80s where it's just like you have your marquee and then you put a bunch of schlubs in.
But now, if you go look when you watch it, for sure, because we've done the Teen Beat magazine review. I remember seeing all of those kids in there.
No.
I don't remember their names.
You just made that up.
No, for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
They would have included them because that would have been their attempt to get them to be.
They were in other things.
Name one.
I can't. But
I can name one. I can name one kid. The punk kid with the kind of brush cut was in Big. Which I love Big.
See, all I'm referencing is they were in other things that we've seen them.
You just made it up. They've never been anything else.
I was watching it before you came over. And I remember seeing, oh, that kid, that kid, that kid. They were all in stuff, but yeah, they didn't.
Commercials don't count.
Okay. Maybe that's what it was.
Oh, Matt Frewer's in it too, though.
Yeah.
Max Hedrum
does like an amazing, it's almost like
that's
he was
right.
And if you watch his mannerisms, he's Jim Carrey before Jim Carrey.
He played the real testosterone-filled Big Russ Thompson.
Yeah. Mm. And
he's great.
Christine Sutherland, who's Mrs. Thompson, is the mother on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV series later on too.
See?
So there's,
well,
there's,
I mean, not we're not talking huge, like massive. It's not like Brad Pitt. Like, oh, that was Brad Pitt's first film. It's not
Max
like,
Headroom.
It's not he like was, the Brad Pack was on it or anything.
No, I think it was a big hit.
It was huge. Well, okay, Disney World at MGM Studios, when they had it, they had the full Honey, I Shrunk the Kids set up, so you could go down, you could climb onto Auntie.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I did that as a kid.
Cool.
Nice.
And that's another one that I wanted to know if it held up. So I showed it to a group of, I think, over, I was going to put it on there, like, I don't want to watch this. And you know, I said, let's just try it out. And they ended up loving it.
Yeah, my daughter enjoyed watching it when we watched it with her. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it, and I've screened it for several groups of children, the same way you have, Jeff. And they all
okay. We should probably just add some. We're educators.
Yes. Yeah, so we
because that was just sounding weird,
creepy.
We work at the same school.
I don't hang out with groups of children. Yeah, what are you guys up to?
The current climate with COVID-19 and all that. We show a lot of movies at lunchtime, and I know when I'm on lunch duty that when that movie came out on the streaming service that the school pays for, it was on in multiple classrooms.
Sure.
And yeah, and I was met with a ton of resistance.
But that's upstairs. Downstairs, with the younger kids, it was a favorite. It was a favorite.
And that opening, remember in the opening animated intro. Yes. It was super cool.
So that was the thing that you got to do at Disney World, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're, sorry, it wasn't Auntie that you're on. You're on the bee or something?
Yep. Okay.
It was, you're on a bee flying around. So anyway, just a weird side note. This was written by a writer called Stuart Gordon. I don't know if you ever heard of Stuart Gordon, but if you're a horror film buff, he did Reanimator. He did a few things in the 80s, and it was all horror-based, like really amazing effects and stuff. So to see his name attached to a kid's movie is wonderfully disturbing, because he made some really disturbing films. But this one, I don't know. I really enjoyed this film.
Me too.
I gotta say, as a kid, I think I was probably more freaked out by this one in some ways than like Gremlins, because the thought of being it was the lawnmower, like when they were gonna get chopped up with the lawn. I already had a bit of a phobia about getting like my, you know, you hear stories about kids getting their toes cut off in the lawnmower, and now the whole thing, now you're little and the lawnmower's going by. That kind of freaked me out. Actually,
that legit happened to my uncle.
There you go.
And he got it reattached. That's not a word of a lie.
But you're right, that does make sense that the setting was all realistic, whereas you know that gremlins aren't real. Well, are you, you're pretty sure. You're pretty sure. So,
but the fact that they went to the great lengths of building these sets and these different set pieces, like, it's just, it's extraordinary, and you just don't see something like this anymore.
Yeah, like, and that fits with what we were saying before of the value of practical effects on the viewer. You saw that they were running on the floor, and there's giant spaces between the floorboards that they had to jump across, or in the yard, more than if they were in front of a green screen.
And the effects held up on that one too. Yeah. I don't think there's too many times when you are like, well, I can see the strings or whatever, right, you know?
I just remember seeing that Lego piece, and they're sleeping in the Lego piece, and I just thought it was so cool. It's not like a new kind of tale. Like, I mean, there's been tons of, like, you know, shrinking people in
Gulliver's Travels,
in movies and stuff. Yeah, it was just updated and rebranded, but it seemed to work okay. So moving on is our fifth spot. Do you think people are still listening?
I don't know.
I'm listening.
Okay, so I'll keep going.
Maybe. If you are listening and you've fallen asleep, this is your wake up call.
Wake up, eh?
We're talking about Space Camp. Okay, so Space Camp had the dubious honor. Like, this was, when we were kids, the space shuttle was the thing, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was amazing technology. And they started shooting that puppy up in space. And they decided to, you know, work with NASA on this brand, and they developed the film Space Camp. Now, Space Camp is an actual thing in the United States where you can go and learn to be an astronaut. So it had a lot of scientific merit to it, and it was used to, you know, establish the brand of NASA. So we had Kate Capshaw, who is, I think, Steven Spielberg's wife still, Kelly Preston, and this was the debut of Joaquin Phoenix.
He wasn't called Joaquin back then.
His name was Lee Phoenix. Right. That's right. We had Leah Thompson.
And also, sorry.
Go ahead.
Lee Phoenix was River Phoenix's brother, Joaquin Phoenix. And, and River was in Explorers, we just talked about. We should make that connection. Mm-hmm.
And River will continue to pop up.
To run. In the 80s. The river will continue to run.
Well, unfortunately, not long enough.
That was so bad. That was good. Yeah. And then, obviously, you know, any macho, you need a macho, you know, infantry character here. Tom Skerritt, of course, comes in with that beautiful brush cut. And he will appear again in a similar role. And I'm not going to spoil that for you. So we have a huge group of characters here. And the kind of travesty of this all is surrounding the Challenger. They were set to release this film in 1986, and then, and I remember this pure as day, the Challenger exploded. I don't know if you guys have any memories of this, but it was like, we're talking again, you know, traumatic events in the 80s. This was a huge one. I remember sitting around, we had a TV in our school, and we were in the library, and we were watching this. Like, we had
a TV.
We're talking about a TV on wheels.
Yeah, just one. There was only one.
It was
one screen in every room. There was one TV. Yeah.
Let's get everyone together, because they were sending a civilian who was a teacher into space.
Krista McAuliffe.
It was, they sent it up into space, and you guys know what happened. It exploded, and everyone died in that explosion. That film was supposed to come out, I think, like a couple weeks later, and I think they shelved it for a year, maybe. So do you guys remember that event?
Oh, absolutely. I remember a similar thing happened in my school where we all went and we were watching. I think we didn't watch until like it was like, oh my gosh, this horrible thing's happened. Let's all go watch the replay. Yeah. I actually should say before, like when I was younger than that, so when I was, I think, 8 or 9, we visited Florida. And I actually saw the Challenger on a previous mission, like from afar. We saw it lift off. Like flying through the air, and
it's pretty spectacular. Pretty cool. I don't know. I've seen 2 shuttle launches, and like, not that I even, I'm not even into that kind of thing. Like, I was in Florida. I've been in Florida at Cocoa Beach, and it was, you know, hey, there's a shuttle launch. I'm like, yeah, okay. And I saw one at night, and I saw one in the day, and they were spectacular.
And I've also in California, there's a science museum. I can't remember which one it's called. They actually have the Enterprise, which was the first prototype. I don't think it flew more than once. I think it only ended up flying because they lost the Challenger and the Columbia, and they sort of brought it out of mop-up. Anyway, they actually have it at the at this museum. You can like walk right up to it and touch it, and it's you'd think it wouldn't be a big deal, but something about it when you're that close to something that's gone to space and you can look right at it and see how simple it is, like how little there is between the astronauts and space, where they have to wear oxygen masks despite what happens in Explorers.
So Space Camp, I was not a huge space person, but I can get why kids were in the 80s. One of our friends, Coach Froze, this is one of his favorite 80s movies.
Yeah.
So when you saw it, did it hold up for you? Like, what did you think?
Yeah, again, this revisiting this, I really liked it. Again, there was a few parts where I was like, ah, this one would be tough for showing young kids in terms of some of the language, I think, the way they interacted. But overall, I thought it was really good. And it bridged the part where we were talking about Explorers became like so unbelievable. Then, not that I believe that if we propelled children into space, they could figure it out, but it at least stayed within the realm of like, okay, this was consistent. That I believe it in the movie as it's telling it,
right?
So I liked it, and I thought it held up.
So I watch movies, and I know if I really like it, because I will finish it in one go. This one took me, and it's fairly typical for me to start a movie, watch half hour, and go and do something else, because I watch a lot of movies. This one took me about 7 revisits, and not because I hated it. I just didn't dig my teeth into it as much as, you know.
It didn't hold you, didn't demand that I gotta keep going.
Yeah, I get what they were doing, and it was fantastic at the time. I neglected to show this to my kids. I don't know if it would have held them their attention, but I totally understand how, you know, a kid like you who would have loved to have gone to space camp would really still enjoy this film. Simon, did you remember this film? Like, did you see it?
So I am sure that I saw it back in the day, but I actually have almost no recollection of the film, and I haven't had a chance to revisit it, which doesn't bode well for it. You know what I mean? Like, I actually do have a pretty good memory for shows that, I've seen. And I only vaguely remember this movie. But I am sure that I've seen it. So, you know.
I get why people like it, though. And I get why it stays in with them. Because it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you could get into a space shuttle and accidentally get shot into space, how cool would that be? So moving on, we have another big adventure film, and this kind of takes, it's a lot different than the other adventure movies, and the last film on our list is When the Night Has Come in the Land. It is Stand By Me. This is, I feel that this movie is different than the others. There's a huge similarity, but it's really I just find it, just as the kids say, it hits different. This one's starring Will Wheaton, Kiefer Sutherland, River Phoenix, who has already appeared on the list, Jerry O'Connor, Joel O'Connell. 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 And Joel, what was the show that we loved that he was on?
My Secret Identity.
And that was a Canadian show. Corey Feldman, who just repeatedly will pop up throughout the 80s. And this was directed by the fabulous Rob Reiner, who's just done a ton of films. I'm not going to give the IMDb list. Google away, people. And this was an adaptation of Stephen King's The Body,
mm-hmm.
who obviously is right through the 80s as well.
And Stephen King, not known for particularly liking a lot of his movies being mm-hmm. adapted into, or his novels being adapted into movies, but he liked this one as my recollection.
He said it was his best adaptation. Yeah. It was the best adaptation of his one of his works. This movie's different in the sense, to me, it's a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other ones are, you know, in the present day. And there was a very serious tone throughout mm-hmm. it.
It was a dark movie for sure. Nothing like the other ones that had a very light-hearted,
but tone. Moments of levity. Although
for sure,
oh yeah, the part about you know throwing up and all that.
Yeah, which fits iconic. With our previous discussion. I think of like, maybe we don't call kids that.
Yeah.
Memories of this movie at the time.
It's funny. There's a huge segment of movies, and actually. Goonies is one of them too for me that I missed. I somehow didn't see them when I was a kid, and then by the time I could sort of get my own videos and stuff like that, they were old news, mm-hmm. and I was like too old to see them. So I didn't see Stand By Me for quite a while after it was out. I was probably like in mid high school mm-hmm. when it came out, rather. Or when I actually finally got around to seeing it. Yeah, I mean, totally. How can you not relate to that at really any age? I think that's why it's still out there. It's mm-hmm. kind of a timeless thing. Yeah. You know?
Joel?
I saw it as a kid when it came out, but seeing it as a teenager, it's like, in my view, one of the perfect adolescent movies because even though it was set decades before it came out, it felt... consistent and relatable to being an adolescent boy, and I was not super adventurous. There's no way I would have done something like that, although I did live near a creek for most of my childhood.
I don't know. I think this is the most realistic mm-hmm. film of growing up, especially as a young lad. I know I had a group of friends that we would do, you know, things like, you know, go into bogs and hunt for frogs and things like that. Did you guys mm-hmm. do similar things?
Yeah, I think the part for me that there was the part where you go out into the woods with your buddies and I don't know that I would have gone overnight with but there's
That's the thing though. Like it's true though. Like you were outside quite a bit.
Yep.
Even though this film's set in the 50s, you could relate. So basically we grew up with Stand By Me as Stand By Me, so we could relate.
Mm-hmm. To I think the part that was like the hook is that like there's this dead body that's going to see, and like that was the part that was like
I love dead things,
but I wouldn't have done that.
No,
but the
me
fact
neither.
That it's in a movie,
I would have.
You know,
I think the friend part was probably what hooked me. That this idea that these four kids who were pretty different, but they knew each other so well, and that sort of an idyllic childhood fantasy, and especially one reflected
Treehouse.
Of like believing that our like I have these friends that we knew each other and we did this stuff and no one else was there. We trusted each other implicitly and helped each other out. There's just something attractive about that.
I don't know that that's the same anymore these days.
No.
It's hard to say.
But did you guys have friends like that where you would, like, for the whole day, you'd be out adventuring?
Oh, yeah. Well, because you just show up at their house on your bike, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, okay, what are we going to do? And because I lived on a dead end near the creek.
So we can all relate to this. So I did show my kids, and again, like, the litmus test, and they loved it.
Yeah.
Simon, did you ever show your...
We watched it as a family. We all liked this great soundtrack.
I have that on vinyl.
I had it on vinyl. It's one of the ones that when I culled my collection years ago, I let the vinyl go. But I have the CD, and I had it on... I had at one point transferred it to a cassette tape, you know, from the vinyl.
Yes.
And I had listened to that one a lot when I was a kid.
The poster was just beautiful too.
Yeah.
Like just the artwork on that poster. So that concludes our list. We have six movies and some, when we put it to the vote, I don't know if there was anything that surprised me at all. Joel, do you want to go through the results of our massive vote? Like we had a massive turnout for this vote. We're only going to use percentages. Don't want to shock you with numbers here.
I actually can't even use some of the numbers. It's just too high. I don't know.
Over the top. I don't know if they were using like bots or whatever to vote. But okay, so if you want to go over the percentages.
Sure.
And before we do that, could you guys just say which one you wanted to see for the screening and what you voted for?
I voted for Stand By Me. I was hoping to see that one for sure.
That was my vote as well.
So it was between two, and it was between Stand By Me and Goonies. But when I really thought about I thought, what encapsulates the 80s better than the Goonies?
Sure.
And I had to put the Goonies down. So do you want to go over the results?
Sure.
I hope I won, because I won the Gremlins one too, and I was so stoked. So I hope I won.
I know, but now it's making people think, like, there's no vote. Jeff just picks what movie
Jeff
he wants.
Is the bot.
That's not true.
Did you vote for the last... What did you vote for the Christmas screening?
Was it
Ernest?
I voted for Ernest.
Did you get a chance to vote?
I had not been aware of
Would you have voted for the Gremlins or Ernest?
No, I probably would have voted for... Scrooged, actually. Okay. Yeah, that's the one I
That was my second pick.
That's an interesting thing, too. In both of these, there's movies that are set in the 50s.
Right.
Of like, so that seems to be a theme of 80s movies that are, there's lots present day, like you said, but then there's a number of them that are set in a different time period nostalgically.
Interestingly, I know we're trying to wrap things up here, but I feel like the 80s are the 50s of today.
Yes. Sure.
Because a lot of stuff that comes out these days is set in the 80s.
Yes.
Right?
I imagine it's the people that age that can now make this. That was when they were kids. And now we've got the 40, 50-year-olds who are looking back.
So you've got the baby boomers making films in the 80s, and then you've got the Gen Xers making films presently. So without further ado, the results, and I would add a drum roll, but it won't sound good. So go ahead.
So bringing up the rear with 2%, Explorers.
Yeah, sounds right to me.
6.1%. That's how big the numbers are really getting.
This is science, by the way.
Yeah, appropriately. Space Camp. Space Camp came in fifth.
Yeah, I totally get that. That's what would have been my order.
At 10.2% was Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah.
That's all Elizabeth Shue.
That's definitely Elizabeth Shue.
Then 14.3%, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So some fans.
Got it. Oh, we're down to two. Oh, my gosh. We're down to two. So we are down to either it's going to be the one that you want or the one that I want. Please pull through for me. Viewers, please pull through for me.
Yeah.
I need this.
Someone's leaving unhappy from this podcast.
Okay. Well, we had to spend time with Jeff, so we're both unhappy already.
That doesn't hurt at all.
All right, 20.4%. Stand By Me.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Which
this means
it was a huge victory. Goonies came out on top at 46.9%.
That's good enough. The Goonies are good enough
for you, and good enough
for your viewers.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. The Goonies is...
I was not surprised
either. It's iconic. Stand By Me is probably, like, a better story overall, but the Goonies
depends
just
on what you're
packed.
Going for.
It's just packed.
The adventure part, I mean, both of them had adventure, but I think, the Goonies is definitely one. It's set in the 80s, present day.
Well, yeah. If it's going to epitomize the 80s, if it's got to be set in the 80s, you got to see those 80s trends.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see those in Stand By Me. Yep. It's not set in the 80s.
So, folks, we have our film. We are going to be screening The Goonies at a theater near you. Stay tuned on our Facebook page. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. If you have any questions, just drop us a line at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. We'll be screening The Goonies. and we can't wait to see you there. We would like to thank Simon for producing this epic podcast and for being our first guest. Thank you, Simon. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to working on it some more.
Joel, thank you for bringing the donuts and the Tahiti treat.
Welcome, eh?
And this is Cinema Time Capsule signing off, and we'll see you at the movies, folks.
Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.
Hey, Mike, found the map!
Whoa, do you guys realize what we could do?
I don't want to go on any more of your crazy Goonie adventures.
Meet Mikey.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Brand. Andy.
Shame, shame!
Come on, Brand. Slip her the tongue.
That's disgusting. No, I can't even look.
Mouth.
I gotcha! Now get out from behind her. You're ruining the painting.
You're ruining my job!
Stephanie. Data.
Boy, Bango!
Guys,
yeah,
isn't that neat?
And Chunk.
Flopped.
They call themselves the Goonies. They've stumbled onto a legend. But they're not alone.
Chunk, I hope that was your stomach.
No. That's the it.
Sounds like Kong.
Discover what they uncover.
Rubies and emeralds and diamonds?
The lost map.
Oh, I started the tunnel.
The secret caves. Hidden clues.
Mikey!
The treacherous traps.
Hello, Sheriff. I'm at the Lighthouse Lounge, and I want to report a murder.
Just like that last prank about all those little creatures that multiply when you throw water on them.
Take the oath. Join the adventure as Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.
This has been the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast. For more information about Cinema Time Capsule, please email us at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. This podcast was produced by Simon Wielden. The theme song was performed by Bruce Turney and Simon Wielden. Thanks for listening.